This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. It was just a way of life for me.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's your old friend Phil Pritchett here. That time of the week, folks, time for the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios here in Fort Worth, Texas, my studio here in Fort Worth, where we talk all things music, all things Phil, all things going on in indie music world to you. The educated, discerning Texas music listener. The network of educated tastemakers out there who revel in taking the road less traveled. Today's a special event here because I have a couple guests with me. My good friend John Reynolds is here.
Hello.
And my friend Richard Massey.
Howdy.
You're thinking, who are these guys? How do I know that name, perhaps? Well, let me tell you what. John Reynolds works here in the Trinidad World Recording Studios down the hall here, across the hall, Midland Creative. You will know him for his fine design work found on The Bullfighter Returns, Blueprint Garage Volume 1, Blueprint Garage Volume 2, and innumerable Phil Pritchett and the Full Band merchandise, the Jack Daniels t-shirt. What other ones have we done?
Luke Skywalker. Yeah.
The Luke Skywalker shirt, of course. Skywalker, legendary, right. with the scrolling. Oh man, we're just raking it in on that.
That's right. That's right. The big
the
seller.
Lightsaber.
That's the big seller.
We also had the band, kind of the band Last Waltz shirt. Best Rock shirt.
Texas Best Rock.
Innumerable. Right. Yeah. Also the Tribal P2 logo, mm-hmm. Which has been
mixed up
in various forms.
Yeah.
My only designs are the rudimentary, just the collegiate text.
Right.
You know,
the bar hat.
The
That's
bar
my
hat.
Favorite one of yours. That represents college so well.
Yeah, just I think Phil did that by himself.
That's right.
But we got some, we always do three segments here on the show, kind of a news segment, a mailbag catch-all segment in the middle, and then what's on Phil's iPod at the end. Here at the top of the show, we got some news because our John also visualized and directed and conceptualized, along with Richard, the Bullfighter Returns video all of you have seen. In beautiful HD at philpritchett.com and elsewhere on the web. Well, it was submitted and has won a major award.
A major award.
Rock video. What was the official title?
It was a big plastic lamp.
Best
of a
music
lane.
Video ever directed by a human.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
No, really. What was the name of the foundation?
It was. It's called WorldFest Houston, and there's a lot of these kind of awards out there. This one is legitimate. It's an international film festival. And submitted it. There were two categories. One was, music video. And the second one was music video under $10,000. This one fell in that category.
It did? We didn't spend more than $10,000
right.
on this thing?
Right, that's right. I think
someone owes me a refund.
I think we spent more money on the bar tab than we did on the actual video.
Well, for those of y'all maybe in the dark, for those of y'all not in the know, and I don't want to offend anybody out there because I know you all are, but we filmed the Bullfighter Returns video at the Fairmount, a bar here in Fort Worth. Sadly, I think now teetering on the brink of closure.
Right.
I don't know. It's BYOB, I think, or something.
Oh, my God.
Our hearts and our thoughts go out to you, Fairmount. But a cool room. We chose it because it was John wanted a wooden, kind of an old kind of a room.
CD dive.
Red
curtains.
Again, try not to offend anyone. red curtains. It had kind of this cool setting. So we set up a whole
used to be a strip joint.
Yeah, right. An old strip joint. That's right. So we set up this whole environment in there with the band playing, and it was a fun night. We just went in there just to knock it out like in one night.
Yeah, and normally this would have taken three days.
Right. Different performances of the band.
Sure, just setups, just the technical side on our end. But we went in there, I think at 2 o'clock.
Well, that was the third week in October, 2008, right?
Yeah. I guess so, yeah, sure.
Yeah, we got there you and I got there at 2 or 3?
2 or 3.
Unloaded for 4 hours, and then everyone started showing up.
Right.
Uh-huh. And around 6:30 or 7, we started shooting.
And we finished, midnight. We finished
at midnight, and you and I spent 2 hours loading up, and we went away at 2 or 2:30.
So, Richard, what was your role in the shooting, the official titles? Was John technically the art director, the director?
We're here in Texas, because we're not union, it was a right-to-work state. Yeah, we all wear many hats in this production capacity. So, John was
so out of state, you have to have an official title or what?
Yeah, you're pigeonholed into one duty.
Yeah, right.
Ah! The unions. All right. So yeah. What would you call your role in this capacity?
I was the gaffer. I set the lights. I was the DP.
You shot it.
Director of photography.
Yeah.
And what? Camera operator. Grip.
Well, normally you would have a full.
Fluffer.
A craft service.
You even went out and got pizza for all of us, didn't you? I think you did.
Normally we would have a full crew with director, a DP, a camera op, some grips, PAs,
production assistants,
things like that. But Richard and I went in there. There was us two. We had two PAs that worked with us that had actually never worked on a set before.
Yeah.
And
and then of course our handy Marine, can't go anywhere without him.
Ray.
Well, fans out there and Texas music folks in the know will know. Also, you guys work on the great High Tide in the Heartland video. Because I gotta tell you, I take a lot of credit for these videos. Everyone's like, man, it's really great. The shots, the idea behind it. And I just say thank you very much. No, not really. I say, John Reynolds kind of had this whole idea for the flyers. Phil, the preacher of the stockyards, stomping around, handing out flyers to strangers and all that. I said, man, that really wasn't my idea. John had the whole concept for this. And that was the same with the Bullfighter video. John came to me and said, man, I feel like that song on the new record kind of has the most visual, lends itself visually to a lot of things that he was also thinking about. And said, man, if we shot it in this capacity, we could, do it in a timely manner, in a fun manner, but also do it in a real artistic fashion. I think that's what probably set it apart and led to your, rousing victory in the category.
That's right.
You would think that independent films made for under $10,000, any kind of video, you're just going to get, and you see them all over YouTube, just some guy with the camera jiggling around, walking through a park and filming.
some kind of gimmick. Well, what's fun about this song or this video we did, there was no gimmick. It was really just filmmaking. We had two or three stories that we were trying to tell, loosely based around the song that I thought was the vision for the song, which talking to you was not the vision for the song, which is fun. That's what makes it a good song. That's what makes it good, right? So, we sat around, had a couple different narratives and, worked out a plan to shoot those narratives in such a short period of time using one location.
One of the great shots, that struck me when I got there to work on it.
And you showed up.
I showed up just like, what's this all about? I don't know.
I had
a loose idea, but I had a lot of trust in you guys after the High Tide deal. I didn't foresee what that was going to be either, and that came out great. So I was like, well, we'll just kind of roll with it. Was the shot, we kind of called it it's kind of funny because we're going to talk about one of our favorite bands, U2.
U2 here in a little bit.
We're going to tease it.
Yeah.
What's on Phil's iPod? We're going to talk about U2 on What's on Phil's iPod a little bit later. It kind of came from some U2 videos, notably the one video, Bono in the restaurant. The third one. That's right. They made the Buffalo one.
Buffalo,
the other one where they're all dressed in drag.
The cross-dressing one. Right. That was
and
the first one.
And then you had the one where they were Bono was in the bar.
In the bar.
Smoking the brown cigarette.
Man of the world.
Man of the world, right.
And that was kind of the idea for the
most interesting man in the world kind of look.
That's right.
The Dos Equis commercials that are so great.
Uh-huh.
We kind of had, I love that shot we had with the light overhead. Mm-hmm. You're just the real bright light. Where did that come from, or who did y'all?
Well, there was two things. Because, I'm a big Martin Scorsese fan. I mean, who, if you're into movies, Martin Scorsese's the man.
Yeah.
That's the you know, the mafia scenes, them around the table with the hot light overhead.
Right, right, right.
And, you know, the camera's always moving. And that's what I try to do in this. Most low-budget videos, the camera doesn't move or somebody's hand-holding it.
That's
this
right.
This thing, the camera's moving every shot. The camera's moving.
Yeah.
That's something hard to do on a low budget.
That is.
And, didn't I just finish building that dolly?
Yeah, well, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the homemade dolly, a lot of things were all homemade. You know, it was a real craft.
It was a lot of work,
man.
It was a craft. You guys worked.
Yeah.
Just into the night.
My dolly aside, my favorite was that that ring light you built.
Yeah, the ring light was good for the bathroom scenes. We knocked out.
Yeah, the ring light was really cool. Kind of that closing shot I got a lot of feedback on. We're all putting on the sun. You know, I did the Fonz thing.
That's right.
Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah, shout out to the Fonz. That's really great. Right. We got a great response from it. I mean, people were just really blown away by the whole. It does have just a theatrical, cinematic feel to it. It doesn't look like something.
Sure.
You know, we've got other videos on there. Other fans have shot that I've shot. You know, on a little.
This is a real the difference. Yeah, the difference between this and High Tide and Heartland was, you know, we expanded our world with all those wonderful people.
That's right.
And that's what makes an endeavor like this so much fun. You gather around all your close companions, and you just. Have some fun.
Yeah, you got some cameos in there from Nick Verzosa from John's Guns is in that opening shot talking to
Kurt
South at the top. Then you have Blake Walker, who's been on the podcast, our old road manager, and sitting at the bar looking important, you know, drinking heavily.
I'm sure he's been there before.
That's right. I think he has too.
And then also, you know, it was populated with people that
with
I've
real actors. With. You know, we brought
people
in
brought
guys.
Earlier that year, I just came off of a game show that I produced and directed.
Yeah, who were the three ladies that took such a big risk in trusting us that evening?
Right.
Yeah, who are all those people walking around in the
one
shots?
Of them, I'll tell you where they all came from. There was a woman on there, Amy. She was the tattooed-clad waitress.
Yes, indeed.
Super
indeed.
Cool all through it. You know, she's a friend of mine from Dallas. She's an actress. She's a singer in her own right.
Indeed.
And she was, you know, great to come out to be a part of it. And who else do we have?
We had Susan Cloud is in there.
Susan Cloud, who is actual, you know, for a time worked as a receptionist here.
In Wavelight at Trinidad Wavelight World Hill. Recording. That's right.
She is a singer in her own right as well. Then we had Stephen Brody, who is actually on my game show. He was in about half. He was in about 12 episodes of my game show that he worked on. He's a great actor in Dallas. What's fun about that guy is that he was my go-to guy. When I was shooting my game show because of his quirkiness, and if I had somebody to be a butt of a joke at the end of something, or I had somebody to be look,
he just filled the part.
He filled it. He filled it. He had the funniest looks on his face. And so when I was writing the idea for the video, I needed the guy to be kind of the dorky guy who gets the girl in the end.
Right.
And
right,
I went
right.
to him, even though he's not a dorky guy at all.
Right.
He just has that kind of vibe he can put across real well with his face.
Yeah. Well, we had a great time. It was really was not much was asked of me and the full band. We showed up and looked cool and drank beer and sat around. And that I like the I get a kick out of the performance piece because we really didn't start that till about 1 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. So I think
midnight,
Richard's wrong with his timeline. I think Phil's more like right on. Yeah, at 1 a.m. is when
man.
We
that
shot
was when we kind
of.
I mean, we did kind of the table thing first.
Yeah, table thing was about 6.
Kurt, we dragged that organ up there and put Kurt South on the organ.
Yeah. And that was more like one in the morning.
He was horrendously intoxicated, I recall.
Yeah,
Kurt
think,
South.
I think
he was just leaning on the organ for support. He was groaning throughout the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept trying to throw water on him just to kind of keep him in the shot.
It was a little bit of a mistake I think I made in planning and having the band in the first hour and then in the last hour. So it's not like they went home or they went to their trailer. They hung around. We were in a bar.
Yeah.
They hung around with their buddies and had a few things to drink.
I think our priority was to shoot out the ladies first so that they wouldn't be mad at us.
To get rid of the ladies, that's right.
That's right. Well, it was fun. We had a great time.
Don't forget Ethan.
Yeah. Congratulations on the award.
Oh, yeah.
Outstanding. Some acclaim coming to John Reynolds, Midland Creative, and Phil Pritchett and the full band. Well, coming up in our next segment, John is also spearheads an event here that we've been privileged enough to be a part of the last couple of years. It is the 3rd annual CARE Concert here in Fort Worth, raising money and awareness for Catholic charities. We're going to talk about that in our next segment and the big show coming up here at the end of May. Be back here in just a second. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Welcome back. It's Phil Pritchett here. Trinidad World Recording. Book the band. Record at Trinidad. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me here at the studio, 817-733-5256. We do it all for you. All right, folks. Our good friend John Reynolds is here from Midland Creative. You know his design work for several Phil Pritchett and the Full Band album covers. Blueprint Garage, Volume 1 and 2, The Bullfighter, and many others. Really all of our posters, a lot of our t-shirts here in recent years have been done by John. He also spearheads, along with his wife, Heather. Hello, Heather. Heather is the, what is her official title at Catholic Charities?
President CEO.
She's the president CEO. That's pretty much everything.
That's it.
She's the president CEO of Catholic Charities here in Fort Worth.
It's a diocese of Fort Worth.
The diocese of Fort Worth.
Big old section of Texas.
Yeah. They do so much great work. My family and I went down to Catholic Charities to visit with the kids down there, children that are in transit, families, people who come from countries with nowhere else to go. Can find refuge at Catholic Charities. Catholic Charities raises, so much awareness about, about people who, really have nowhere else to go. It is a place for people to find refuge and love and support. They do so much great work here.
People of faith.
People of faith.
Helping all people in need.
Helping all people in need. That's right.
You don't have to be Catholic. We're not be involved with Catholic Charities.
That's right.
You don't really, you know, have to be Catholic at all. They represent all faiths and all types of people. You know?
Well, they definitely do the Lord's work here. And so a couple of years ago, we had the first annual. I was approached by John and Heather about playing a show. It was really, at that point, the first annual care concert.
Yeah.
It was more than like a Phil Pritchett and the full band gig in a bar. And instead of, Phil... getting paid from the door, we'll just give the money to the charity. It'll just be a fun night.
It was a fun night. It was just he would donate the proceeds.
Donate the proceeds.
You know.
But I want to also say this, because there's a lot of charity events out there that claim to be charity events, and they are. Don't get me wrong. but the word charity gets thrown around a lot. It's for charity. Well, let me tell you what. A lot of times the bands are getting paid regardless. They're getting paid lots and lots of money to be there. Everybody shows up, everybody drinks a ton, has a great time, and when it's all shakes out, the actual dollars that go to the charity can sometimes be significant, but let me tell you what, other times can be just sort of a representative check. Just here's a, it benefited sort of this thing.
Unfortunately, you're right.
Well, I've had a lot of experience playing shows where I'm like, I'm getting paid something, and it's quote unquote for some charity, and all I see is a bunch of people drinking, and I'm kind of like, how does the money really go to this thing they're talking about so much? So,
and that's not all. That's not all of them. That's just some of them.
Of course not. But what I loved about the thing, Catholic Charities, it was a very cut and dry deal. Mm-hmm. Every dollar comes through the door, just goes to the charity,
goes,
we'll
right
all work for free. And that's just kind of how it was set up. And that was something I could really get behind. I said, because you want to know that what you're doing has an effect.
Sure. Any of the money that any kind of promotions or anything that we had, the venue, most of it was all donated for free. If there was any money spent on any part of this, it was all donated to be spent on this.
Right,
so
right.
All the proceeds that come in through that door all go right to the charity.
Well, the first year we went and did it at Jack's Off the Wall, which is up here off of, or used to be up there.
White Settlement. It was iffy.
I think every place we've had it is closed.
We closed it down.
We did Jack's Off the Wall. So that was a little more than me and the full band getting up there. We also had, I think Kurt was there.
No, Mikowski.
And Jordan Mikowski.
He
played.
He opened it up. Yeah. He opened
it up. A small place, but very, very successful. Yeah. I mean, it was full of people. It was great. Everybody had a good time and raised some money. So next year we went over to Lola's. Which is up off of
6th Street.
6th Street.
Yeah.
And which I had never even been in and played last year at Lola's. And that was a lot of fun. And that was a little more involved. We had, McGee was there. Who else? Kurt.
Was
we
awesome.
Had Kurt and Kurt's brother. Uh-huh. We had the Texas High Life guys were there. We had Mike Mathis was there.
Mike Mathis was awesome.
Mike Mathis
just tore it up.
He tore it up, man, when he got up there.
People had not seen him before.
Well, it was
there.
More of a Phil Pritchett and the full band on stage.
Yeah.
We played like 45 minutes and we kind of said, hey, let's get, we had Kyle Redd was there.
Kyle Redd
got up there and played like three songs with us.
JD Clark was there.
JD Clark. He went
first. This was a big cast of characters.
A big cast. It was mainly all the guys whose records I'd produced, and I kind of knew their songs already. I said, "Well, let's get these guys because I kind of know the tunes, and I could get."
It was a 3-hour jam session,
right.
Party thing, man.
And also, awesome. Man, I was that's significant for me. I was in a haze. You can't really tell on the tape, I don't think. I had the flu. I had like a 102 degree fever. Right. But, we've been planning this
Best
thing all
show
year.
Ever.
I just went, man, I can't just not show up.
Right.
I said, Michael Jordan, he plays with a sprained ankle or something in the playoffs.
Right.
I had to
Phil
show
is
up.
Michael Jordan.
I don't think I've ever missed a show.
Yeah.
So, last year it was Phil with a 102 degree fever. Playing Mike Mathis songs. It was a blast. And at the end, we did the band.
That's right.
The
Wait.
The Wait.
If you go to the MySpace page, which is myspace.com/careconcert, there's tons of photos from it, and you can download The Wait for free.
Yeah, The Wait for free. So that's right. A little rough, but hilarious.
Yeah,
man, I get
a
kick out of it.
but fine.
I think it sounds pretty good. Yeah, I mean, it came out. Of course, it was the end of the night. We're all there singing in the one mic.
The atmosphere in the room,
off,
you know.
Man.
That's always a tough part of that song. He goes, take a load for free, take a load off, and drink, dang, hey. There's just this hanging moment where you don't know when the band's going to come back in.
Right.
No one plays it the same way twice. So I'm just, you put the load right on, put the load right on, and then we kind of fell back into it. But we got through it just fine.
That's
Stu
right.
and Blue, they knew where to be looking. They were just locked on to me.
That's
all
right.
These other guys that they're singing,
they
bumping into each other with their guitar. when you come in on, put the load right on me.
Really, there was probably like 11 people on stage.
Oh, it was great.
For that last song.
A really cool room, too.
Yeah.
Well, this year it's going to be at the Longhorn Saloon, which has been newly opened under new management here in Fort Worth in the Stockyards. Right across
historic.
The street from where, High Tide in the Heartland was recorded, man. And
it's
the video
cool,
was shot.
It's a great venue.
It's a large room.
It's a large room.
We had them on weekend nights last couple of years, which was tough getting other acts out. So this year it's cool. It's going to be on a Sunday night.
That's
May 31st.
It's on a Sunday, and it's a little earlier show. It's going to start at 7.
7
so,
o'clock.
So it'll kick off there at 7, so you can be home, tuck the kids in bed.
Yeah. And, man, just know that when you pay that, how much is it to get
in? It's $20 this year, but you know that all $20.
Yeah,
going
you're not
right
paying
to the
Phil
charity.
Or anybody or
or the venue.
You're not paying Kurt South's beer tab. Everything just goes to the charity to help people in need, regardless of their faith or wherever they're from. It's just people doing great things for other people. It's something you can get behind. Catholic charities. And this year, of course, we've even grown the lineup.
The lineup is insane.
Our good friend John Schott. A lot of y'all probably are fans of Max Starling out there. My good friend Max. And John has done some work with Max Dawn. He filmed the entire new DVD of his.
Max had a
beautiful job.
A DVD kind of documentary concert film that came out.
That came
beginning
along
of this
with,
year.
With his album.
With the album, mm-hmm. It was a 2-hour extravaganza we shot at the
Granada Theater in Dallas. Just a great place to watch something on DVD for sure. Max is going to be there, so it's kind of funny. Max is a. You know what I love about Max is he's in a class by himself. I mean, he is just a country honky tonker from way back.
He's a Texan.
He's a Texan by God. So we always joke with each other because I'm kind of the weird rock guy and he's just the straight laced country guy. But we've played a lot of shows together, so I'm familiar with his songs enough.
Right.
So I hope he's open to. We've already talked Max and I about us backing him up on some songs. And so Max is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to get up. He'll probably do some stuff by himself, then some stuff with our band. And then we've also
got, of course,
Kurt South will be there.
Kurt South
our
will
good
be
friend.
There.
And the great Walt Wilkins.
Walt Wilkins.
That's a coup.
I know.
With Wilkins up here.
This is an incredible lineup, really.
So it'll be a great show. The fun thing for me is that I get to be on stage the whole time.
That's right.
So
Phil has to
basically
steal the spotlight.
Me, Stu, and Blue will be up there. We'll go off intermittently. Like Walt, he'll probably do a couple songs by himself.
Yeah.
But then, the idea, and John, you were instrumental in this. You wanted to get the idea of just, it is a very unique show. It's not, I've seen Walt a lot and Max. This isn't it.
It's
my job as the guy, as the band leader that night to push everybody. Max might go, I don't know the words well enough. And man, I'll just go ahead and start playing it.
Yeah.
And I'll just kind of stare him down and just get him a little uncomfortable, perhaps. make him dig deep to pull it off. If you don't know the lyrics, make one up. Let's go. And I think that's what I did last year. It was a lot of fun, kind of throwing some guys in some situations, telling guys to take a solo or sing a verse when they don't. But it's exciting. It keeps everybody on their toes. And, and the whole goal is for people to say, I saw this guy, I saw that guy, but I saw them all together at Catholic Charities Care concert last year. And, man, it was this unique thing. I mean, it was just a one-time deal. They were all up there. You could see everybody looking at each other, signaling each other, communicating with each other. And just try to make it a fun, sort of a controlled chaos on stage.
Controlled
chaos.
It's
very unique. So I'm really excited about being a part of it. We are the band is. So we're going to try to learn a few Walt Wilkins songs, a few Max Stalling songs, Kurt South songs, and just have an event out of it. It's just going to be fantastic.
Oh, it's completely different.
What can people do in the meantime besides just show up and pay their $20?
You know, if we've got the website, you can go there. You can shoot me an email.
And what is that website again? That's the it's MySpace.
MySpace/CareConcert. And you've got to have a MySpace page.
That's right. Yeah.
If through that though, you can go to the Facebook. Everybody's doing Facebook. On Facebook, you can join, become a member or a Facebook team fan, and that has all the information about the show. If there's groups of you guys that want to go, give me a buzz here on the Facebook or on the MySpace, and I can arrange group tickets for you. We do pre-sale tickets that way. But really, just come that night and get ready to have a good time, because it's a completely different show
every year
you're going to see.
That's the goal. So, well, it's just it's a great time. And even in just the 3 years we've done it, you can just see the progression.
Oh,
how we went from a little place with no acts, with just us, to you know, a slightly larger place with some more acts. And then this year, a good-sized room, a well-known venue in the Longhorn Saloon, a great room there in the Stockyards. With Max Stalling, Kurt South, and the great Walt Wilkins. So it's going to be a challenge for me, man. I'm going to have to hone my chops a little bit as the guitar player, band leader, you know, to lead everybody through the songs and get through the night. So we'll be holding on to our hats. It'll be a great time. Well, that is going to be May 31st. Get out there to the Fort Worth Stockyards on Sunday. Everyone will be back in town, ready to rock. Summer, it will be here, and it's just for a great cause.
Get out of the heat.
Get out of the heat. Cool down with some beers, and it's always a fun, wild night benefiting a great cause. Every dime that comes through the door will go to Catholic Charities, and we couldn't be more thankful for the work they do here in our community. So that is some great Care Concert talk, and year three. I'm looking so forward to it. Well, we're not going to break with that. We broke with tradition a little bit here, and then our middle segment's usually a catch-all mailbag kind of thing.
Oh, it is.
Okay. We had a special event, of course, at the Care Concert. Huge news. You guys won the video. We're not going to break with tradition when it comes to our third and final segment we always do, which is What's on Phil's iPod. John and I, John is a huge music fan, very, very knowledgeable, always listening to music, always telling me about new stuff, new bands that I even regret. I'm like, man, I haven't heard it yet. I don't know who that is. Very much on the cutting edge. So we started talking about some lists you made about your top 5, top 10 albums of all time. Very difficult indeed. I said, yeah, I know that record pretty well. That's cool. But we finally settled on one. And it's really something we haven't really covered here on the podcast that I think all of our listeners out there on Radio Free Texas and PhilPritchett.com maybe know something about, maybe don't know a whole lot about. And that is when U2 reinvented itself in the early 90s.
That's right.
The great Achtung Baby is going to be Achtung Baby on Phil's iPod when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. Phil Pritchett here with my good friend John Reynolds, Trinidad World Recording. Email us here at the studio if you'd like to record at Trinidad World Recording or book the band for a private show. You tell us what we can do for you. It's phil@philpritchett.com. Or give me a call, 817-733-5256. It's what we do. Well, I'm excited about this segment. I always love going through the iPod, seeing what songs have been played a lot, where the numbers are, and that's kind of where I start.
It's the just, play count.
Yeah, I've been listening to this a lot when this comes up. You know, we're talking about U2 here.
This isn't an obvious choice.
Not an obvious choice?
It's not, especially for a Texas, say, no. Texas rock. Come on.
No, it isn't. We try to stretch it here. Me and Kurt South, of course, the great Kurt South has been here quite often. We're always pulling up something from 1969 or 1973.
Sultans of Swing.
Yeah, you know, doing a Dire Straits or Van Morrison or something.
Right.
I am a huge U2 fan, always have been. I mean, that's just right in our wheelhouse. You and I are about the same age. You know, growing up in the 80s, it was hard to miss U2. But, you know, I'm always struck that some of the younger guys, maybe who are just 19 years old, 20, 21 out there, and Texas music, more country fans, you know, might kind of, there's the guys on the iPod commercial, or they're a classic rock band, I don't know, they're disco, just maybe kind of turned off by it, and I understand that.
Right.
But they're still a gigantically huge popular band who have been through some fascinating
changes
and phases. I first became aware of U2 when I was in a heavy metal band in like the seventh grade.
Nice.
It was like 84.
Yeah.
You know, I was wearing parachute pants, playing. Right. You know, we were playing Rat and Judas Priest and Van Halen. But one of my cool friends' older brother, man, he had this sound coming out of his bedroom where he had, like, you know, the Smiths posters and stuff like that. And, man, he just had this live crowd Sunday, Bloody Sunday, New Year's Day. Of course, the great Under a Blood Red Sky. Right. Go to YouTube. Look at U2 Under a Blood Red Sky or Red Rocks. Mm-hmm. It might be.
They just remastered that whole thing.
Yeah, that is U2. They pushed all their chips in to make that a Red Rocks video and just try to capture the band live. Because people, you know, their records, while they were eclectic and cool and edgy, and I love them, those early albums like Boy and War, October, had a real raw edge to it. I mean,
well, they were a punk band.
Yeah, I mean, kind
they
of
really were.
Really,
they really
categorized as kind of a new wave band.
New wave,
kind of,
they're
kind of like The Alarm, or they're kind of like you know, some of these other bands around at the time. But Under Blood Red Sky captured the spirit and the purpose and the sense of purpose that this band had that let you know they were special. The torches lit up, you know, around
waving
the venue.
The white flag.
The white flag, the fog, Bono marching, just getting the crowd going. Sunday, Bloody Sunday. It was a riveting thing. I mean, you know, all these other bands I was watching had spiky hair and mascara, you know, and I was kind of like, man, these guys are different from Ireland. These guys are hard, rough-hewn kind of dudes.
And, you know, now a lot of that's kind of been parodied.
I mean,
they think of you two as these activists or these...
Real political or...
Right. But really at that time, what they said really meant something. It was really a big thing.
That
was very different for acts at that time to speak out, to really be anything other than just, you know, a hair band or...
Yeah, right. That's right.
On. They actually meant...
Or a band like, you know, Madonna, people kind of like shock value type acts coming in, you know, who took advantage of the MTV platform to... you know, showcase a lot of gratuitous stuff, you know, to get people's attention. So here was little U2, man, who had been struggling, really. I mean, even though they had their hits in, abroad and, man, hard touring. I mean, you know, touring in a van kind of deal, really, in those days. But, man, had such a sense of purpose, such charisma with Bono. The Edge, you know, his guitar sound, of course, has been copied a million times. Just a great architecture of delay and reverb. And then in the later 80s, you know, my high school bands, we were playing, of course, that was when U2 had Unforgettable Fire. Of course, the Joshua Tree just blew them up worldwide.
Right.
And, of course, you couldn't escape U2 in that sound. They got to, after the success of the Joshua Tree, they did Rattle and Hum, the movie, and had a couple new songs on there. The Great Desire was on there. But, you know,
Angel of Harlem.
Angel of Harlem. And they had, but there was some sense that, you know, that they've kind of, you know, what are they going to do now? You know, they've kind of done this whole America thing out in the desert with the ponytails.
Well,
you're kind
of
like,
that's where they started to become a parody of themselves.
A little bit, yeah. There's no question.
Early on, I mean, people looked at them as if they were just,
right,
you know, silly, because they acted as if what they were saying meant so much. And it did, but to the point where they were kind of full of themselves in a way.
Well, a lot of that stuff on Rattle and Hum, there's a lot of sermonizing, you know, on silver and gold.
As much as
I believe in isn't short on cash, mister. You know, Bono just pontificating from the, you know, we all love that. You know, it's the purpose and everything. But you did kind of go, man, are these guys just going to beat me over the head the rest of my life?
Exactly.
And there was that, I can't remember where that show was, where Bono actually said, kind of at the end of that tour,
right,
we're going to go away and make this all up again.
It was on New Year's Eve, 89, in Germany. I think it's where it was. Yeah,
and they just sort of disappeared. And no one knew.
Dream it all up again.
Dream it all up again, sure. Which was kind of an odd thing for them to say. And they disappeared. Of course, what happened was they ended up trying to get a new record together, struggled with it. And I've related to this a lot recently and in past, where you just don't know what. Everyone's like, what kind of album do you want to make? What do you want to do? We can do whatever you want. You know, you got your own studio, or you got whatever, the world's ear.
Sure.
But, man, it is hard. It's hard to produce yourself like they do. Of course, they're working with Brian Eno, the great Daniel Lanois. So what ended up happening is they went to Germany. They went to Berlin to tap in to the energy of the new Europe. You know, that was after the wall came down in 89.
They were on the last plane.
Yeah. And so they go into there, and there's just all this kind of rebuilding and restructuring and enthusiasm.
Right.
Freedom is in the air. And Europe coming together, and they still struggled with the music. But I remember seeing that interview, I guess it was Behind the Music or something, but Larry Mullen said, man, we were really at our wits' end. A lot of
infighting. They were done.
And Edge kind of started playing that guitar part that opens the song One,
right,
we would all come to know and love. He starts playing that. And Mullen and Adam Clayton, the bass player, just said, man, that's it. And Edge kind of said, what? This isn't anything. This was just some little bluesy thing. He said, no. He goes, we're following that, whatever that is.
Right.
And that was what they locked onto, man. And,
you know, every album needs an anchor. You know?
Yeah.
And that was the anchor for that.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You're saying one love, one life, when it's one need in the night. One love, we get to share it. Leaves you, baby.
Man, it was just, we've covered the song One on stage before. It's one of my really all-time favorite songs.
Yeah.
And man, when this record came out, I was in college and had lost track with U2 over the, I had the Joshua Tree, but 86, I haven't caught up. And man, when that thing came out, I remember listening to it, laughing, and just throwing it out the window. Just like, what are they trying? Oh, now they're going to be like some industrial,
dance
disco band or something. I was like, this is ridiculous.
All the European
totally shunned it. I had no time for it.
Right.
I had other stuff going on musically that I was interested in, and but man, it kept showing up. It just kept someone's car.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite tracks on there is one of the Ghost tracks, "So Cruel."
And that's incredible. Song.
You're so cruel.
Yeah, that's right.
Great song, but man, you had all those just, like Jurassic Park dinosaur guitar tones, coming in and out.
Mm.
You know, Zoo Station.
Right.
My favorite from the record is also "Till the End of the World."
to me, when I first heard this album,
yeah,
I didn't know what to think about it in a way. I listened to, you know, every song.
Do you have a similar reaction that I had? Just what is this?
It was a little different for me because I bought this album and instantly on that day when I listened to it, this was my favorite album. I had a different thing where I remember, I was in high school, I guess, and I had this album and just remember just loving this album so much. And even now, but it's funny to me to think that there was a time before there was this album. And what music sounded like before this?
That's really true.
You know, and I'm gonna build these guys up, and it's kind of a Sgt. Pepper of that time.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Because there was a time before U2 where they sounded, which we talked about earlier, with the way they sound, and then after Octune Baby.
I always get a little argumentative with people because everyone always talks about the Joshua Tree, and rightly so.
Sure.
As their greatest album, but I always shake my head. I go, dude, nothing is as great as or ever will be. And I loved All You Can't Leave Behind.
Sure.
I thought was phenomenally great
songs. Right.
And but man, Octune Baby, as far as the songs. And the sonic thing that they sculptured.
Yeah.
And the whole thing it represented and the time it represented.
Sure.
It was influential for me because I was young. I was listening to a lot of music in college, of course. And, man, the new Europe, you know, the 90s being ushered in. Mm-hmm. And I went to that tour. I went to the Zoo Station tour. Right. Now, this was before they went into, like, the Zooropa Europe phase. Mm-hmm. Where Bono was wearing the horns and all that.
The devil.
But this was... Man, Zoo Station, I went to Irwin Center, and, you know, with the disco car hanging from the ceiling, all the TV screens, Bono in the leather with the glasses.
The fly, man.
He just totally reinvented himself. It was just a bizarre thing. And you would think, why wouldn't they just keep doing what worked?
Well,
you know?
It was is really, I think they were just fighting what was inside of them. You know, what was inside of them, this freedom fighter, flag waving, you know, jokes, and so they just fought against that by dreaming it all up again, by completely just exposing themselves as rock stars that, you know, that are going to drink themselves to death or something. I mean, they were being characters, that was the whole persona of themselves. You know, at that concert, that's where they wore the big papier-mâché heads of themselves.
It was just a bizarre, over the top thing. Mm-hmm. But man, Bono just went to another level as a He was already a great front man. But he would get bored, man. You couldn't just go the rest of your life saying, man, this is the part where he comes up with the flag.
Yeah.
This is the part where he tells us about South Africa and the injustice, you know.
But now people look at that and think that's who U2 is.
Yeah, that's right.
The Zoo Station, the people that are over the top, the pop, the characters of themselves, the parodies of rock stars. When, they created that then.
Yeah,
and
it's fascinating because really their whole I looked at them as rough Irish guys early on, early 80s, October, Boy, War, Political, man,
Wide Awake in America.
Yeah, Wide Awake in America Live, and a lot of that coming from just all the turmoil in Ireland. Mm-hmm. All that stuff was a part of who these guys were, and they grew with the Unforgettable Fire, the Edge of Sound, and all that. But they always wanted to be real. They wanted to be rootsy. They wanted to be true. Mm. And so they just wore the earthy clothes around that era.
Cowboy
grew
hat.
The hair, hang out with B.B. King, you know.
That's right.
Love Comes to Town. And right. America and the blues.
Sure.
They showed up at Antone's in Austin around that time.
Okay.
I knew some people who were there
night.
They said, man, I was watching a... God, who were they watching? It was somebody, some local dude.
Okay.
Like Jimmy Vaughn or something.
Okay.
And he said, I'll be right back, and comes back with U2. There's like 20 people in the bar.
Right.
They come there and play harmonicas all night. And really wanting to get in touch with the blues and the Delta. And then once that was, you know, seen through on the Joshua Tree, their willingness to just totally reinvent themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, put the atomic bomb to their image, to their sound.
Yeah.
And those are the signs of the truly great bands.
That are continuously changing.
Willingness to do that. That at some point they say, man, we can't just put out the same.
Can't do the same
album,
thing over and over again.
Over and over again. Yeah. And it's proven tough to top because Octune Baby was such a huge staple.
Yeah.
Even their records today, Bono still has kind of the same look. The Edge's guitar sound, it varies some. They benefited from great songs on All You Can't Leave Behind.
Right. Which I think is their follow-up.
But I think that's the double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. It is tough. And I think, you know, they do search for their identity on, like, you know, how did this man on atomic bomb? Mm-hmm. I haven't heard a whole lot of the new one, though, which you've reviewed very positively.
I like the new album. What I get don't quite understand about the new album is that it goes back to the old way of making a record. And what I mean by that is that Octoon Baby, track 1 through 12, are all hits. All number one songs. Any band in the world would want one of those on an album.
Oh, no doubt.
So there's no A or B side. But No Line on the Horizon, there's an A side and a B side.
Yeah.
In my opinion. The A side is very friendly and you know, great to listen to. The B side, just good music.
Very challenging. Yeah, it's challenging stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, even those deep, deep tracks on Octoon Baby, So Cruel, we mentioned. Acrobat.
Love is Blindness.
Man, you can stay with that record all the way through. I mean, of course, you have the big hits like, you know, Wild Horses.
Sure.
Even better than the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Mysterious Fly. Ways, The Fly.
Yeah.
Those are all just, those were all huge videos, you know. One, of course.
I mean,
just a gigantic record.
The Fly.
Groundbreaking.
Really, if anybody has this album that's out there, sit down.
Yeah.
Put your headphones on and just listen to The Fly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
It really is amazing. And, of course, Daniel Lanois producing a lot of that.
Come on. I mean, that guy.
He can just spur bands to new heights. That's the role of any great producer is to just, you know, to not come into it with any preconceived ideas. He just sort of let them work it out. And then once they got onto something, he just said, hey, this isn't, you know, we need to stay on this path. This is where you guys seem very alive and very with it. But a challenging record. I'm really always been inspired by how they struggled to make that record.
That's a list that
it's inspiring.
A list that we should do sometime is a Daniel Lanois.
Great Lanois-produced albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have Oh Mercy by Dylan. And, of course, all the U2 stuff.
Sure. One of my favorite albums is
Teatro by Willie Nelson.
Teatro, you can't go wrong with that. But the Sling Blade soundtrack.
Yeah, that's right. Awesome. He did do that.
Oh,
that's right.
That's great.
Atmospheric. There's a lot of pedal steel on that.
It's all pedal, yeah. Man.
Yeah, because all the great guitar players morph into pedal steel players.
Right.
They get tired of playing easy instruments in tune, and they just want to play the most difficult thing they can play, I guess, through sheer boredom.
Yeah.
Well, that is some look and talk at the great record, Octoon Baby.
Hope we shed some light on
Hope
it.
Hope we shed
we
some
did.
Light on it. Well, you know, I work with a lot of young guys here in the studio, and... you know, we're not getting any younger, Reynolds. We, you forget that just everybody didn't grow up with this record like we did. So I think it's worth reintroducing, man. Octoon Baby, man. U2. You don't like their new stuff, iPod commercial. Go back and listen to Octoon Baby. Sonically mind-blowing. The songs are fantastic.
Read the lyrics.
And man,
read the lyrics.
Yeah, read the lyrics.
Forget the
go
music,
back to
just
U2. Go back to Under Blood Red Sky, Red Rocks, early 80s, U2, man. And, light yourself on fire with what they have going on. Well, John Reynolds, thanks for being here. Congratulations on winning the major award for the Bullfighter Returns. We will see everyone listening out there in Radio Free Texas land and on philpritchett.com at the CARE concert, the third annual CARE concert, May 31st at the Longhorn Saloon with Max Stalling, Kurt South, and the great Walt Wilkins. And, of course, Stu and Blue. And myself, the full band, all on stage the whole night, trying to keep up, throwing covers out there, and just jamming into the night with no restraint. You can download all of my songs at p2tunes.com for just $4 a piece. Please do that. We're also on iTunes. And call us here at the studio. Come record, 817-733-5256. Check out John's website. That's midlandcreative.com.
M-I-D-D.
M-I-D-D-L-I-N creative.com. Get John to design your T-shirt or logo poster. He works very, very hard. It's very affordable.
very hard. Yeah.
Well, he just does great work. I always marvel at.
Let's make a video. Whoever's
out
there.
Yeah, make a video as well. He makes videos, designs a lot of bands who've recorded here. Mike Mathis, John's Guns have had their album covers, great record covers designed by John. Yeah. So shoot him an email there as well at midlandcreative.com. Well, that's all the time we have for the podcast. Thanks for listening on Radio Free Texas and philpritchett.com. Email us to get in the mailbag, phil@philpritchett.com. We will see you all at the CARE concert. And we will be talking to you next Wednesday. From the P2 Podcast and for John Reynolds, this is Phil Pritchett signing off. Take care.